same. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.
Hey everyone, I'm your host of the Shrimp Tank Boston. With today, we have Jeff Chastain from Admentus. We're going to bring him on in just a quick second. Would like to remind all our listeners that you can find this show, all shows, on theshrimptank.com/Boston. You can get it through iHeart, Google Stitch, SoundCloud, basically anywhere that you get your podcasts. You can follow us. We'd love to get your followership. You can also subscribe to this channel, which would be great. And our tagline, obviously, you can see it in the background of me, is where book smarts and street smarts collide. Today, we have Jeff from Admentus, and he has a vast level of experience with some of the most successful business people across the country. I'm going to talk about some things that are really interesting about growth and how to break out of some of the ceilings that some folks have when they're running their business, and to have a growth-minded mindset and some of the skills and attributes that are needed to achieve those goals. So with that in mind, Jeff, it's really awesome. You're actually in Texas today. I'm here in our office in Boston. But welcome to our show.
Hey, thank you for having me. And honestly, I love the tagline there, because as many different business owners I've talked to, very few have actually a business degree, business background kind of a thing. Entrepreneurship is so much learn on your feet kind of a thing there. So I love the tagline there.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up, because I'm hearing a lot of, I think Forbes or Barron's a couple of days ago said like an advanced degree is the biggest waste of money you'll ever spend. And, you know, you probably know with some of the business executives and people that you work with, you know, the learning lessons are costly, but you can learn a lot on your feet.
You can definitely learn a lot on your feet. I've got podcasts as well. And I think we've done like probably 50 or 60 guest interviews with other business owners, just talking about how they got into business and built business. And I'm trying to think right now, I think only one of them that I know of really said, hey, yeah, I came out of college really as a college incubator type program there to build the business really as part of the college program. And that's the only one I can really think of off the hand that said, yeah, I've got obviously a business or any kind of entrepreneurial degree. And we're probably starting to see more of that. We're seeing some programs and stuff like that, leveraging entrepreneurship in college or even in high school kind of stuff. But yeah, most entrepreneurs I've dealt with either have a degree in their own expertise or definitely not necessarily in business per se. And that's always been the challenge I find for a lot of them, that they've got their lane of expertise and now let's go build a business around it. And that's where the learning really starts, because there's a lot more to business than just being a lawyer or just being a technology person, just being an accountant, something like that. You probably realized as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was funny. I was driving with my son yesterday and we were actually going by Harvard, and he was like, you know, I was really enamored with that, being a 14-year-old, and he's talking about that. And we were like, hey, you know, think about Bill Gates, Zuckerberg, Larry Ellison, these types of people, Elon Musk to a certain degree. They're all people that exit out of college to execute their business, you know, really, really fast. So it's really interesting being here in Boston, being university centric and biopharmaceutical centric, how many different businesses are out there. But let's dig right into the meat, because one of the things that we talked about offline that I thought was really cool is you talk about often four pillars of what you like to see in a company and a mindset. Could we maybe dig a little bit deeply into what those four pillars are?
Sure. And yeah, it actually ties back directly into what we were just talking about there, of being more to a business than just your expertise kind of a thing. And that's, like I said, that's where I see a lot of them. But now whenever I'm working with a company, we're looking at what I refer to as four different P's there, but basically saying, okay, people, put together with purpose, put together with a playbook, and then lastly, put together performance. So the people side is actually the Jim Collins kind of arena there, if you're familiar with his work. But it's basically saying, okay, do we have the right people in the right seats? And this is, to me, a struggle a lot of times I'll see with early stage entrepreneurs, because you don't necessarily have a plan for hiring. You don't necessarily have a plan for people. Just kind of, and then you've initially got your kind of immediate friends and family kind of circle that, yeah, we can draw off of them or leverage them. But when they start going out and trying to hire beyond that circle, there's a lot more to it than just saying, okay, do you meet the skill set that I need? And that's what we really still see on, unfortunately, a lot of job boards and stuff like that, is it's just this laundry list of, do you speak this language or have this accounting degree or this whatever kind of stuff? And it doesn't talk at all about the personality side, the cultural side there that, honestly, most early stage businesses especially, but a lot of businesses in general don't have defined. So you're just kind of throwing darts to say, okay, I'm going to go make, honestly, a pretty expensive hire in most cases here to bring somebody in, hopefully do a job, but well, do they really fit the dynamics of the team? Do they really fit my dynamics? Is okay, how do we manage it? And things like that. So it's interesting. Almost every business leader I talk to dealing with challenges, something like that, there's almost always a people aspect to that challenge there. So that's really a lot of times where we'll end up starting is just saying, again, that people component, trying to find kind of right people, right seats, making sure you've really got the structure defined. You know where you're trying to go from a, say, okay, to meet these goals next year, this is the personnel structure. So therefore, where do we need to hire? What do we need to hire, rather than just going out and throwing darts? So that's kind of the big key right there from the people side.
And then get out of the way. I was able to interview a really cool guy a couple of weeks ago, Carlos Cashman, but he alluded to exactly what you just said. But one of the things that he adds to that is he empowers his people and he gets out of the way and lets them, you know, do what they're meant to do and not micromanage.
It really is. And I'd be curious to hear what his reasoning was behind the micromanagement side, because I've seen it. I've dealt with it myself, kind of thing. And that really actually goes over to the playbook side to me, because to me, when you're micromanaging somebody, most people are not saying, hey, that's fun. That's what I want to do. The reason why they're doing that is because they don't have the clarity or the visibility to understand, okay, is that person doing things the right way, getting things done the right way? And when you go to it first of saying, okay, I'm going to build out the playbook, I'm going to build out the processes to say, okay, if I'm trying to outsource or trying to bring on somebody to handle the financial client invoicing, I can't just say, hey, I hire you on, good luck, go do it. That honestly, that was one of my first experiences in corporate America when I first started out, was it was literally just kind of drop in, and they hadn't figured out, okay, what my job role was going to be, who I was going to report to, what I was going to do, kind of a thing there. It's just go shadow this person, figure it out. Entrepreneurs, small businesses, we don't have that kind of luxury usually to say, go shadow somebody, or the time and financial resources to pay them for several months to go figure it out. And to me, that's where the micromanagement comes in, especially on the small side, is because we're used to doing things ourselves. We're hesitant already to take off that hat and hand it to somebody else. And then we want to make sure that they're really doing it our way, which honestly, hopefully we'd be hiring somebody in smarter in that area anyways that could improve upon our process. But unless that process is defined so that that person knows what the metrics are, what the key points, what the key deliverables are, if they've really got that and we trust that they've got that, we're a lot less likely to micromanage at that point. But yeah, that's one I see a lot of times. Is it seems like almost every business owner I talk to, and you say, okay, what's the biggest challenge in growing a business? And it's delegation. It's how do I hand that stuff off? And then to your point, not micromanage it after I hand it off.
Yeah. Control, let it go. And you know, being able to do that. This might jump ahead for the other, the P's, but would this be lack of vision?
It's not necessarily, I'd say lack of vision ties into the biggest picture, because really that's the purpose side. But now to me, this is really just in, honestly, kind of management 101. How do you hand that off? Because again, a lot of times entrepreneurs are, we're big ego person people. We're solo people. We're used to saying, okay, we're going to push ahead, shove through this wall, kind of a thing there. And now all of a sudden we've got to start handing things off and leading people and not doing it ourselves. It's a mindset shift going from that initial kind of technician mindset to say, okay, we're the ones doing it. We're the ones doing everything. Now you got to start shifting over more to the owner mindset to say, okay, now my role is more managing people, managing the company, managing the vision, like you're talking about, not being down there in the trenches, actually managing the books or doing the IT services, handling the calls, whatever I'm used to with my, and especially when it comes to their level of expertise or their area of expertise, that's one of the hardest ones I find to really step out of, because I'm the expert in whatever. I'm the expert in the IT services. So of course I want to be down in the help desk, making sure we're really answering all of our calls right, or we're documenting or dealing with our processes, dealing with our deployments right, kind of thing there. So that's, to me, well, that's one of the hard ones. But yeah, it's just that transition from that technician role to that owner role as you start growing that business, because you can't stay down in the trenches that way and run a successful business.
So let's go on to IP number three.
So we actually jump from people to people to playbook. Playbook's actually the third one. But yeah, going back to your comment there, really it's the purpose side is number two. So that's really the vision to say that, okay, once we start building out this team, if you think of like a game of tug of war or something like that, you don't want everybody pulling in opposite directions, pulling in different directions. You want everybody, your entire team on one end of that rope, pulling the same direction. And to me, that's where the strategy and the purpose, the vision comes into play. And I really look at it and say, okay, it's not just, it's a case of, okay, who are we going to be as a culture? So we want to make sure that we're defined, everybody's unified. But then again, making sure we've got that longer term vision. I'll typically talk to business owners about saying, okay, what's your 10 to 15 year goal out there. And granted, we don't have to have a step-by-step roadmap to get there, but we at least need to have something out on the horizon to say that this is what we're shooting for. This is what we're aiming for. This is what everybody's getting excited about. You mentioned Bill Gates earlier, always like going back to the early Microsoft comments where they said, I think it was either late 80s or early 90s, where he was saying, okay, our goal is to put a desktop on every desk in every home in America. And at that time, it was absurd. It's like, why in the world would you ever need that? And of course, today we're looking at, I've got three sitting in front of me right now, kind of a thing. So it's that kind of goal early on to say, okay, that's what gets your team united, everybody excited to say, okay, I don't even know if we can do this or not, but it's at least what we're aiming for and what we're shooting for. And building that kind of system just unifies your team right there to say, pull them all together. And now we know where we're going. Mm-hmm.
Jeff, what's the difference between that mission and culture? Are they the same in your opinion?
No, I think there's actually differences. To me, the culture is saying, okay, that's your core values to say, okay, we're going to be an open and honest management style kind of a thing, or we're going to be a innovative kind of company or whatever. That's just, okay, who we are as a values. That's who we live up to be. Versus to me, the vision is saying, okay, where is our plan? What's our goal is to hit that. I like I said, we take it at the 10 to 15 year, and then we start backing it down to say, okay, If the 10 to 15 year is the pinnacle of our mountain, the top peak there, okay, what's that first ridge that we're trying to hit to, that if we know we can make that ridge in the next 3 to 5 years, we'll be well on our way to that goal. And then we back it down again. Okay, so what's our objectives for this next year, for this next quarter, to where everybody really understands, okay, this is the path we're on. This is where we're marching, trying to get to that overall pinnacle. But to me, that's the strategy, that's the vision side, separate from culture, although they all fit together right there.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you'll be employed for a long period of time, but are you, to this day, are you still blown away that so many businesses out there don't have a business plan? Like you said, that runway, that 10, 15, you know, quarter, whatever.
It especially, I would say, honestly, it affects all levels, but yeah, especially in the smaller startups, because, and I look at it really realistically and saying, again, most people went into it with the technician mindset of, hey, I was actually just talking with a lady earlier that did a marketing firm. Her firm literally started because she was good at social media. She was good at marketing. And it was a side hustle while she was looking for her real job. And before long, it actually turned into the company and everything. But when you accidentally fall into something like that, or you go into something like that, most of the time you're just looking at, okay, what do we need to do to get to the next day? What do we need to do to get to the next client, the next invoice, kind of a thing there? You don't really typically look and say, well, okay, I'm going to step back and really do a term of strategy for my company. But what you end up with is just that hamster wheel that is just, you're constantly pedaling a little bit faster and a little bit faster, but honestly going nowhere at that point. And it unfortunately has a lot of side effects. Another story, was just talking with another entrepreneur earlier this week who is 7-8 years into his company, and they've done, I think he said $9-10 million. So good, successful product company, but never really made that jump from the early stage startup where, yeah, we're just pedaling harder and harder, to being a structured, systematized, strategized company. And because of which, he's completely burned out right now. And he's the creative kind of visionary type, but he's been so embedded in the operations of the company for so long, he's done and looking for a way out of this company. It's like, you've already built a product in this case, or a service, either one. You've got a market, you've done $9 million in sales, you've done the hard part. All you got to do is figure out how to transition it to the next level. And so many people struggle with that on the, from the entrepreneur side. And that's largely because you don't have that longer term vision or that longer term strategy there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Let's go through the other tenets that you think are really critical.
Yeah. So we touched on people, we touched on the purpose, we touched on the playbook. So basically, playbook is just having documented your way of doing things, your systems, your processes, et cetera. So again, you can hand that off and really scale at that point. It's one of those things of, you got the one salesperson or the one line worker or whatever. If they're the only ones that have it, we've all heard this story before, but if they get hit by a bus or they decide to take vacation for 2 weeks, something, we got to have somebody else that we can plug into that role, hopefully without all the knowledge walking out of their head. So it's really a matter of documenting and systematizing all those processes in the playbook. And then the last piece is just saying, okay, from a performance standpoint, that really everything we've kind of touched on has been plans and ideas for stuff that we're looking at, with having the right people, having the right strategy, the right vision, the right playbook. If we're not actually executing on it, so the performance side, then it's all just a dream at that point. So it's really making sure you've got the accountability in your team, making sure you've got metrics, making sure you're running things by metrics. And to me, that's another area where it helps minimize the micromanagement side of it. That if, as a business owner, if I can see numbers, if I can see trends that say, okay, everything's working, our number of defects is down within critical, within acceptable ranges, our number of incoming leads was within expected ranges, I don't have to get down in the trenches and say, okay, why are incoming leads off? Because I can stand back at that point and say, okay, everything's good right now. I got green lights across my board here. I don't have to worry about that. I don't have to go micromanage at that point. So to me, that's another area that just helps that negate that macromanagement side that a lot of people struggle with.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back. So let's say as a company doesn't have their culture established, like what are some of the things or exercises that you would put the client through to really isolate what the culture is? Is it interviewing the founders and, you know, just actually being a shrink to a certain degree? Tell me a little bit about how, if you know, company A has, they don't really have a predefined culture and they're all over the map, which is, you know, typical. What would you do with going through that process?
Yeah, I was gonna say, they've got a culture. It's just not well-defined, or it changes on a daily basis kind of a thing. But no, it really, I can't say I've ever heard it described as being a shrink, but it really does come down to that, to say, okay, especially with the leadership team, but even going deeper than that, a lot of times to say, okay, who are we looking? In some respects, I would say actually it's a little bit easier for a predefined company, because they can start kind of looking back and saying, okay, what were the type of clients' engagements that we really enjoyed? And then you start looking, okay, why did we enjoy that? Was it because it was this kind of relationship or that kind? Was something happened here? So when you've got a little bit of history behind you, it's actually easier, I've found, to go back in and figure that out, to say, okay, who are we right now? Versus the flip side is saying, okay, when you're going at it new, you define that culture up front. You go in and say, okay, these are our core values, the honesty, integrity kind of stuff, or the open, transparent, whatever. And then once you're making those hires, making those people decisions, you've already got that boilerplate to say, okay, do you fit our defined culture? So it can work really either way. It's more a question as to, okay, do you want to flat out define it, which is a lot harder for an existing company because you've got a lot of people, a lot of history kind of thing, a lot of baggage behind you, versus the smaller company saying, yeah, we can define it. The bigger company saying, okay, let's kind of figure out who we really are, codify it, and maybe steer it a little bit at that point. But it's one of those, I guess I'd describe it almost like a big ship, a cruise liner, or an oil tanker, whatever. Once it's moving, it's kind of hard to change it at that point. It's going to take some time to course correct at that point if you're really going to try to make any any drastic changes.
Understood. So we kind of joked offline a little bit. We're talking about some, both of us have learned some valuable lessons and mistakes and things like that. Let's talk about some things in your career that, you had some starts and stops, and now Admentus is growing, and you can be very selective of who you get as a client, which is great. And we do the same thing in our day jobs. But talk about like the journey for you as an entrepreneur, how you learned to be able to impart all this knowledge. And then my follow-up question to that will be, are you pulling from, resources of other people, because you can't know all the issues, but you've built a network of amazing entrepreneurs across the world that, that you could, on your speed dial, if you will, get a problem solved.
Yeah. Now, I say, remind me on that one and come back to that one. There's several good things there. But now, as far as a journey goes, I didn't start with the business degree. I didn't start with the entrepreneur side. Like I said, I actually started on the technology side, went into corporate America, because that was just kind of my upbringing. My expectation was that you go corporate America, get the tenure right there, retire out of it kind of thing. And I think I made it about 7 years in corporate America before I was just like, okay, enough of this. It got to the point of, I've said it before, where I think we had 2-person offices at the time, and I was literally waiting every single day for my office mate to leave so I could leave and not be the first person out the door. It's like, if you've gotten to that point, it's past time for you to be gone. But no, I took just a complete leap out at that point, went into consulting, effectively taking all the technology knowledge I'd done and doing what was today be known as fractional CTO work. So jumped straight into a consulting agency, which, even from a business standpoint, there's other pieces to a consulting agency, but to me, it's kind of the halfway in between, because I was never looking for employees. It was just me. I was out selling, trading dollars for hours kind of a thing, which it worked for a while. It worked for early days kind of a thing, made some pretty good money off of it. But over time kind of thing, started seeing really I was dealing a lot with smaller companies at that point and running into a lot of the issues that we've talked about it, we've hit on over time, such that it's like one of the favorite stories was the 2 CEOs. One was a client I was talking with, kind of a thing, that they were out on the golf course. One of them was saying, I'm having a hard time with sales, numbers are down. His buddy said, well, we just put in this new CRM system on our side, and it's really helping out our sales team. They're really being a lot more efficient. So he comes to me wanting to say, hey, can you implement this CRM system for us? And we go through all the discovery, all the implementation, all the training. And then, of course, afterwards, later on, he came back, it's all unhappy. Well, our sales numbers didn't increase. Like, duh, all you did was slap technology on top of a broken business process. And that's, unfortunately, the ease of which it is to grab technology and implement it, especially at the smaller levels today, has its own double-edged sword there, that if you don't have the underlying systems, the underlying business in place to go put technology on this case, you're not going to get any benefit out of it. You're going to lose a lot of the benefits. So that was actually kind of one of my turning points, was to say, okay, there's got to be a better way to do this rather than just sell you another widget. Let's figure out how to come in and solve the underlying issue. So that was really one of the launching points to say, switch from consulting into coaching. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was the impetus. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. So let's talk about, I guess that golf course thing was a good example of your network and how like you kind of leveraged some of the personalities and the expertise. But how critical is it for you to be able to pull on various people that have different levels of expertise?
To me, it's absolutely critical. And I would argue that it's really critical for any business owner out there, that it's like you said early on, or made the comment, that it's, you don't have the expertise everywhere. You've got to be able to leverage expertise other places. That I look at my practice and the way I coach very, I'd almost call it horizontally within a leadership team. I'm not specific to sales or marketing or finance or anything like that. I'm looking at, okay, overall, how do we systematize your business? How do we make your business function more efficiently with a strategy, with a goal in place? But once you start saying, okay, yeah, we're having problems, how do we structure the sales comp plan in our sales team? I'm out at that point. I just happen to have a sales coach over here that's his expertise. He knows exactly how to build, run, manage the sales team, how to structure your sales process, your comp plan, everything. Let's go talk to him and get him to help you out with that sales process. So to me, the network kind of a thing there is absolutely critical. And then the other side of that, or the flip side of that, I would say, is that even from a business owner perspective, a lot of times when you're the owner, you're at the top of the food chain at that point. Who do you go ask for questions or ask for help when I hit a wall and okay, performance is stagnating here? That's where you need more of the peer advisors, the peer counsel, whatever kind of a thing there. I talked to a lot of business owners, again, on my podcast, who said that's really the point at which their business took off, was when they brought in a board of advisors, they brought in a coach, they brought in something else to where they had that outside sounding board. Because even going back into my early technology days, I would always coach developers to say, okay, don't go building a project on your own, because it's too easy to get the blinders on going down this path saying, okay, this is the right path, this is the right path, until it's not. And as business owners, going down that wrong path like that without having any outside input, sounding board, et cetera, can be very, very costly. If we're going out and buying machinery or going into a new market or something like that, we can spend a lot of resources there going down the path that somebody else might have said, hey, why are you doing that? If nothing else, just make you stop and think about it. And that's where a lot of times, especially the board of advisory, to me, come into play, that, okay, you've got to go effectively justify major decisions. And it kind of causes you to stop and think. It's like, okay, is this really the right thing? Is it worth spending all the time to justify and back up, et cetera? Is it really worth that investment? So yeah, to me, having the outside advisors, having the outside people that I can offhand work that I don't necessarily want to do. If I want to outsource the bookkeeping, or I want to outsource the marketing, whatever, being able to leverage that kind of, those kind of resources is, to me, imperative for being able to grow a strong business.
I agree. I tell my clients all the time, I'm the quarterback on most of the things, but I leverage my network every day. I mean, there's so many things that I encounter in the business world that don't have the time or the expertise, and to be able to, you know, make that call with a connection, it could be a crypto specialist or whatever it is. That's really what I think the value that I bring is, you know, the resources and the connections and things like that. So, yeah. And then also, you also experience professional alienation if you're the only person generating the ideas, and, you lose that aspect of, someone that's impartial looking at it from a different angle and saying, like case in point, that old story about the truck that got stuck under a bridge and all these people trying to figure out how to yank it out. And then some little kid comes along and says, let the air out of the tires. You just can lower the truck, you know, and having different vantage points, I think, is pretty critical in a lot of cases. I know we're kind of bumping up against our time pretty soon, but what are some of the, maybe David Letterman asked, the top 2-3 things that you see where people are bumping up against ceilings, where, you know, you just see it all the time, like, aha, like, you know, there's got to be some commonality of where people just get stuck, or they're just at that ceiling for whatever reason.
Well, I'd say, I think we probably touched on several of them already, but to me, again, one of the key ones that comes back when I'm talking with people is the delegation side, to say, okay, we go into business, especially early on, just by necessity. Yeah, you're wearing all the hats at that point, but the sooner you can start taking those off and figuring out, again, how to take them off permanently, how to keep it off, how to make sure that that process, that job, that role, whatever, is still moving forward correctly. That's one of the biggest keys of saying, okay, yes, we can truly grow at this point. Because if we're still trying to do it ourselves, there's only so many hours in the day. We're just a self-limiting factor on our own company at that point. And it was another business owner I was just interviewing recently was saying that they actually went, that was the college one that actually went through Shark Tank and everything. I think Mark Cuban was one of their advisors, but he was saying, okay, he could see, again, from the outside, it was a group of four or five of them that basically they had hit their peak in terms of being able to do it all, having all the knowledge, et cetera, and be able to say, okay, this is the time really you need to start hiring in, start bringing in new ideas, start bringing in simply more manpower at that point. So kind of combination there. I'm saying, okay, the delegation side, and then be able to bring in and hire the right people there. And then really to your point earlier, again, I'd say the strategy side's one that's largely missing there, to say, okay, what is our strategy? What's our goal short of just selling another widget, selling another product, selling another service right there? There's got to be a bigger picture reason for being in business, because if nothing else, that'll go all the way down to your people side to say, okay, if your people are there just for a job and somebody else comes along and offers them $5 more an hour or whatever the case may be, why do they have any loyalty to you? Is it, if it's just a job, if it's just a paycheck there, you want a bigger picture strategy, a bigger picture mission, values, people, something to get people excited about. And that will even help, I find, in the earlier days with attracting talent, that you may not be able to afford the top level talent there, but they may be willing still to come work with you on ideals to say, yes, I want to be part of this mission moving forward. So yeah, it's, to me, it's getting that strategy laid out, getting that plan laid out, and then having the delegation aspect for sure is probably one of the two biggest things I'd say holding people back these days.
Yeah. A good friend of mine, long time ago, probably 15, 20 years ago, I'd say, introduced me to a concept called results-based pay. And he wanted to, in essence, create little mini stakeholders in his business where at the end of the day, they weren't clock watchers. If they were going to go pick up something in the lobby, you know, there's a piece of paper or whatever, they all became mini stakeholders in the business. And the way that the compensation was structured was 40% of their pay was their essentials, you know, the things that they need to do, but 60% was based on metrics and performance. So it was results-based pay. I was curious, you know, in your travels, do you see something like that being prevalent or working well?
It's interesting you say that. Most of the time I would only say I see that through a sales organization or something like that. But the one criteria or one flag I would say on that is, again, just making sure you've got the right metrics set, because a lot of times I'll see people, yeah, we've got metrics, but it's like it really doesn't mean much, the metrics they've got. That sales is an easy one to pick on, but you say, okay, we got a metrics for the number of dials you make or the number of calls you make. It's like, what does that really matter? From an overall sales perspective, what you really care about is the number of deals closed or the profitability of that deal closed, kind of a thing there. So are you truly measuring the right metrics to drive the business forward? Because I could see a lot of people paying for or just simply tracking the wrong metrics that don't tell you much about the company. Right. So it's having the right metrics in place. But yeah, I can see that. Like I said, I see it probably most in the sales organization. I haven't seen it much in operation side or finance side of the business, but I could see where it would work if you had the right metrics, especially the right metrics that they would have some control over. I'd be concerned about having division wide or even group wide metrics. At that point, you're dealing with the I guess it's more of a socialism kind of experiment where it's yeah, it's the one person carrying the rest of the team and they burn out and see it and then everybody falls, kind of thing.
Yeah. And then again, that's the, like you said, just where we started this conversation culturally, you know, what do we stand for and, you know, how that works across the organization and all that. Culture is, you know, really, really critical.
It's the culture. And then the other side that, again, I look at with a lot of people on the people side is, okay, really having a clear, concrete way to measure your people. You've got the performance side. That's fairly easy to measure people on. But I also say you need to measure them on the cultural side. And if you don't have that culture defined, how do you know how well they fit your culture, or how well they're living up to your culture? And therefore, how do you have that performance review with them to say, hey, great, you're out there selling anything and everything, but the problem is, you're selling stuff that we can't deliver on. So we've got customers unhappy now because you're not really meeting our culture of the honesty and the integrity and treating the customer right, et cetera. You're just focused on selling dollars right there, closing deals kind of thing. Yeah. So it's a lot harder to have that conversation when it's not defined.
Right. It's true. It's funny you mentioned that when I just did a performance review for a colleague, and I always start the conversation on, let's start with the things that I do that aggravate you or I could do better. and it's funny and it's hard to pull it out because they feel like they're going to insult me. And I'm like, if you can be honest with me, and because I'm not perfect, I'm growing and learning every single day. just like, you know, I want everyone in my organization to be able to do. But it's an icebreaker, but it actually is probably the most beneficial part of the whole review, because I learn more about, you know, what makes them tick and what makes them happy than just asking them, you know, just general questions about their job. So it's a bonding experience too, but there's so many gems when we start that conversation that way.
It's interesting with that, because again, I see a lot of times when they're doing performance reviews or whatever, that's just real soft kind of questions. And again, it just goes back to, okay, do you really understand your people? Do you really understand their personalities, like you're saying? Because a lot of times I'll run into the same kind of issue that, okay, this person's just not working out. It's like, well, why are they not working out? Why are they not meeting their numbers? Why are they not following process? Oh, it's because you two are technically speaking different languages. You're not communicating at all between you two, just from a personality standpoint. My wife's in education kind of thing. It's like there's 4 or 5 different ways. They've always got to teach something, because all the different kids in the class, they all learn differently. It's like they don't grow up and all of a sudden become the same. They still take those differences up into the workplace. So unless you understand the differences with each one of your team members to say, okay, this is how we need to better communicate, or this is how we need to work this. Yeah. You cause problems right there. So I can see it for sure. Having that kind of open conversation to say, okay, each one's a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of what you get to do. You're not doing the same thing. There's so many different, that's the great thing about business. I mean, you can walk into a nail factory or, you know, someone making widgets or anything, but you know, there's the whole differentiality of going into different types of business is really cool. We're just about out of time, but I would like to remind again, just real quickly, you can follow us on the shrimptank.com/Boston, Google, Stitch, SoundCloud, anywhere you can follow the podcast. The Shrimp Tank now is in 13 cities. Not only our channel, if you will, but all the other cities have really amazing entrepreneurs, different industries and different specialties. So they're worth jumping around the channels if you have the time. So with that said, Jeff, really very thankful that you could come on and impart your knowledge in a short, like fire hose type of mentality quickly. For our listeners, what's the best way to get a hold of you? Would it be LinkedIn or your website? Maybe you could just, it will be in the link at the end of the show, but for anybody that wanted to inquire about your services, what would be the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, Admentus.com, the website, admentus.com is probably the easiest way. It's got obviously links to all the social media there. It's got links actually to our podcast and links to the new Entrepreneur Mastermind program that we're putting together right there. So tons of information out there. Obviously, you can contact me directly there. His email address is just jeff@admentus.com. So always happy to have a conversation. Like I said, I just love hearing the stories more than anything. So I'm always good for talking with any business owners that run into challenges or looking to grow there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great. And very slick website, by the way. It's got a nice calendar. You can just link directly to Jeff's calendar to schedule a time that he's available. So definitely check that out if you have a chance. It's a really great website. With that in mind, Jeff, thanks so much. And I think I'm going to jump on your show maybe down the road too. So that would be a lot of fun. We can expand on this conversation.
Yep, definitely look forward to it. So thank you very much. Always enjoy the conversations.
Okay, Jeff, thank you so much.
I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank. Going to put it all together. This is big things. Doing big things. Chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real. This life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream. All the dudes yell. This is just what I do, and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie, keep going. You know the saying, you can reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, Roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general, from the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell in my lap, never. Going hard as ever, the results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling
feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.